Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts. You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Welcome to the Annie Fry Show. Brad Young sitting in today for Annie. She's out, but that means I get to come and have fun with the cool kids. So thanks for joining us today. Ryan Wiggins, as always. Good to see you, sir.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this Friday for since I've known it was happening, which is probably about a week and a half ago.
Okay, well, Friday's been happening for, I think, you know, for centuries, for millennia. No,
but I was not looking forward to last Friday at all.
Oh, you weren't? Oh,
no, it was okay. This Friday.
This Friday.
Not last Friday?
Not last Friday at all, because there's Bluebell ice cream out there.
Oh, I didn't know
there's
that.
Bluebell ice,
yeah,
ice cream out there now?
No,
now?
It's leftover.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
from Tuesday.
Nobody told me about free ice cream.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we could probably do that while we talk.
That would make great radio. Mr. Range, good to see you, sir, as always.
You too.
Hey, we're going to have lots of stuff. I told Brad Range before the show that I had like three shows worth of material to go through.
You always
today.
Do.
I always do, because there's always stuff to discuss. But before we dive into any of that, you know, the issue du jour, because Trump tweeted this out, or not, on Truth Social, rather, last night, was that he now wants to make daylight savings time permanent. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I was hoping that this was still an issue on the table, because I think Elon Musk when was daylight savings? About a month ago, roughly now.
Correct.
Maybe a little bit more.
No, it was. It was in late November.
Well.
Oh, the new one.
Switch.
Oh, the new one.
The
yeah,
switch.
The switch. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was about a month ago.
It was.
And at that time, Elon Musk did a poll on Twitter, and he said, would you rather have it stay this way or that way? Daylight savings or standard? And the poll was almost 50-50, and it was hundreds of thousands of people voted in it. And then you find out later that Trump was actually using that poll to decide what to do. So I was surprised to see Charlie Kirk put up the same poll yesterday.
Right.
But his had a third option, which is leave it alone. So I clicked on it, of course, to see how it was going. Pretty much evenly split between the three.
Oh, sheesh.
So I just don't know. I'm glad to see somebody saying, yeah, let's do something different here, because everybody just constantly complains when it happens, including me. But I don't really know what the change should be or whether we leave it. I don't know.
Well, it's tough. And part of the reason it's tough is because of how it affects kids at school and stuff like that. And
that's
sports.
The main issue right there.
Yeah. So one of the things my wife brought up to me was kids at a bus stop early in the morning. I'm not sure which one would be worse, you know, but if you don't change it one way, you'd have kids that are waiting in the dark at like 8 o'clock in the morning for the school bus. But if you do change it, then you would have kids at the end of the day that couldn't go to athletic events because it'd be getting dark too soon.
Do we have a lot of athletics? Maybe so.
Oh, for
that,
sure.
That don't have lights
The majority of spring athletics don't have lights.
Man, even the smallest schools I go to have lights anymore.
Right, but not on their baseball fields.
Oh, well.
Not on their lacrosse fields, not on their soccer fields.
And my oldest daughter, the only athlete in my entire family, she was in rowing. And, you know, you don't have lights out on a river or a lake, so if she would have to be rowing in the dark if something didn't change.
Yeah.
So that's the whole issue, and that's why, and frankly, that's why we have this bifurcated system, is to try to please everybody. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, it really screws up a lot of stuff when we have to change those clocks. I personally would like to see it as daylight savings all the time. So,
which is that it stays later.
What it
is correct. Later,
and that way, when you get off work in the fall, you're not, you know, it's not dark at 5 p.m.
I will add this to the conversation. I used to never want to wake up in the morning. The older I get, I just naturally wake up earlier. Is that an aging thing, or is it just a me thing? You too?
Yes.
What's the deal?
I hate it.
I used to stay up all night. I mean, in college, you're up till 3 in the morning, yep. And that's when things start to shut down. And now I'm up at 6 a.m., maybe 7.
I'll tell you what changed for me was getting this job. So I have to get up at an earlier time than I would for my other jobs, because you can't. Before I started working here, I was I did lawn care and stuff like that, and you can't go out too early because there's dew on the grass and it'll clump and it'll just look terrible. So you just start your day later and you go later into the afternoon, evening, whenever you get done. But when I started here, I would have to be here at the time that I get here, which means I started regularly getting up at 6 a.m. And then when I did that, I was tireder at the end of the day, and I would start going to bed a little bit sooner. I mean, I still have nights where it's like, nope, it's 2:30, and you ain't going anywhere, Brad. Just stay. you're awake. Sorry.
So Ryan, here's what I want to know, though. When you wake up at 6 a.m., do you feel the urge to yell at kids to get off your lawn?
Yeah. And
okay.
I do.
Oh, Brad. I absolutely get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. Because yeah, that could be a signal. That
and
could
I
signify
shake my
getting
head.
Older too.
You're getting old.
Well, I do it now preemptively. There are never kids on my lawn unless they're my own.
Okay.
And so I yell and I make sure that they never show up, which
they
don't.
You know what keeps kids off your lawn? The Second Amendment. That will definitely keep kids off your lawn.
I couldn't tell if this was a Brad Young segue. Like, oh, you had a Second Amendment story, and you're like, that's how we're going to get there?
A brand new segue. I do have good segues.
You do.
I will tell you that.
You're famous for them.
But this is not a Brad Young segue. Just an observation that the Second Amendment will definitely keep the kids off your lawn.
Yeah, so
no
the First Amendment.
No question about it. No, the First Amendment won't.
Yeah, by yelling.
Oh, I'm thinking freedom of association. They're going to try to be out there and associating on your lawn. Like, no.
You're such a lawyer. Gosh, you went right into it. This is why I like you being on the show, because we get the legal background on everything, even the mundane.
Yeah, even the mundane. That's exactly right. I like to play this game sometimes when stuff is absurd. It's kind of like I like to break down Star Trek issues. And it's, of course, it's absurd, but you analyze it as if it were real. And so when I face absurd issues in the real world, I try to break them down from a legal perspective. It can be rather humorous. But yeah, Second Amendment.
Sounds like it.
Second Amendment, guaranteed to keep the kids off your lawn. That could be a meme right there.
Just put a sign up that says, we have guns. Stay out. No?
The Second Amendment is honored here. That's what you. That's the sign.
Oh man, I never put up signs saying I have guns.
No, I don't either.
No, I don't want anybody to know.
I just go out and show my guns.
Oh really? Well, that's an old man thing.
By which I mean my muscles.
Oh yeah, your biceps are Dez and Troy. Is that it? Destroy?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
He needs a needle and thread because he's feeling ripped.
The other thing, though, I did want to mention is, and I thought we were done with this after Tampon Tim waltz, but the Baltimore City Council just this week has a bill that would require that menstrual products be given away for free in men's restrooms.
Whenever I think of Baltimore, I think about these issues.
You associate Baltimore with menstruation?
Just menstrual issues in general.
Yeah, okay.
So it's good to know that they're tackling these head on.
Well, here's the thing that comes to my mind, and it's hard to discuss this seriously, all right?
But we're going to try.
But of all the things that face, all the problems that face urban schools, the financial problems, the violence problems, the being able to recruit good teacher problems, all, I mean, there are countless issues that face urban schools. Not we, but Baltimore wants to devote time, effort, and money to put tampons in men's restrooms? Really?
You know, we've been talking about this bill, attempt at a bill that's working its way through the Illinois legislature right now that would regulate homeschools and private schools. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's the state. They can't even come up with an actual justification for why they're doing it, because normally they'd put some sort of cloak in front of it and be like, oh, well, we're trying to stop what they say is truancy. And nobody's like, what the hell are you talking about? But so anyway, they...
How could there be truancy for homeschool?
Staying home from homeschool?
That's what I mean. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So they can't even figure out how to pitch this thing.
Right.
And there's a huge uproar in Illinois, and not just among conservatives and Republicans and homeschoolers and private schoolers, but among people who would be typical Democrat voters. I mean, there are people who are like, whoa, 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 whoa. My kids go to a private school. My kids mm-hmm. go to homeschool, and they're kind of getting upset about it. So there's a lot of pushback against this bill, and we're all waiting to see what happens. Are they just going to jam it through anyway? Because they absolutely could, because they got mm-hmm. enough votes to do it. But there's enough pushback that maybe they won't. So we're all watching this. But you just brought up a point that made me think, man, there's another angle to that we haven't even really discussed. It's that they're... Ultimately, they're trying to discourage homeschooling.
Of course, because the history of homeschooling has been one of conflict with the government, because the view of the government is that we control the education of your children, that you parents are too stupid, you're too much of an imbecile, your IQ is too low, your values are not correct, you cannot possibly teach your children, only we, the academics of America, can teach and mold your children. And to some of that is true to this point. They want to mold your children into atheist, leftist, socialists, and that's what they want to do with their children. And so there's always been this pushback against homeschooling.
Yes, and the angle that I'd never thought of until just now talking with you is that why would you want to, if you're a state that's broke, which every state is broke, but Illinois...
No, Missouri is not broke.
Well, okay, but why would you want to fiscally, no matter who you are, any right. state, especially Illinois, why would you want to discourage people from taking kids out of the school system and putting less of a burden on the school system, which is already underfunded and mismanaged and, mm-hmm. and doing a poor job? So you would be trying to push more kids into the public schools. It's for the reasons you just said. It's for
Correct.
Indoctrination and control and
Correct.
Everything you just said.
And it's a worldview issue. It's
but
a
it
worldview
doesn't even,
issue.
It doesn't make sense financially at all.
No, not at all. But when you're arguing from a worldview, they would rather have the added burden of kids in school. They would rather have that than have you teach your children outside of the indoctrination dome that is our schools. And it's also even goes into colleges. But they don't control that as much. But yeah, they don't want your kids outside of that dome.
The government, the leftist form of government, wants more control over everything. Another random thing about Illinois that I would have never known, and this could have changed because it was a couple years ago it was this way. I haven't checked recently. I doubt it's changed. Is that if you decide to live off the grid in Illinois, mm-hmm. you have to still plug into the grid just to be sure, legally. you can't just keep your own energy if you're going to have a solar farm or whatever you're going
right.
to do. You can't just keep your own energy. You can do that stuff and you can use your own energy, but you still have to be on our grid so that we know about it.
Yes.
Why?
Well, if you're talking about weird bills, you know, another bill that's being pushed in Illinois by the governor's office is a requirement for all-you-can-eat buffets in every town. I don't know if you knew that.
Well,
it's coming straight from Pritzker.
There are very few things that he and I would agree with.
Straight from Pritzker.
Well, I'm part of that contingency.
Bipartisan support.
Yeah, this one has support from Ryan Wiggins.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's the most dangerous place in America, standing between Governor Pritzker and an all-you-can-eat buffet. So
I'm willing to stand there.
Really? You are?
I stand up for the rights of buffet owners.
I have, Mr. Wiggins, I have described you to many of my friends, even last week, as the winner of the KFC Chicken Award.
Thank you very much. I did very little earn that. But.
I know, but you got free chicken for a year, didn't you?
Didn't lie.
I did. Here's what I did. I mean, let's. you guys are making me blush. I went down there when I saw that a line was forming.
No, so you were following the herd. That's what you were doing.
That's how I won.
You followed the herd.
And it paid off. And I was one of the first 50 in the door. Yeah, that was a couple years ago. I don't go to KFC quite as much as I did when it was free. But I still go there once in a while.
Yeah, well, are you saying that when you were getting it for free, it was still overpriced? Is that
No, okay. I'm saying that I just don't go back as much because it's not free.
The free food was the enticement.
It was the price. It really had a hook in me.
Yeah, I speak at a lot of conferences, and when I'm introduced and I go up to the microphone, I always say, "Hi, we'll talk law for food." I mean, that's why I'm here. I get a piece of goopy chicken, and then I talk for an hour. That's what happens.
Goopy chicken.
That's what it is.
It's accurate, though.
Wait, do you say that at the event?
Oh, yeah. What are they going to do, fire me?
I'm working for free. The caterer is going to be like huffing and puffing.
I don't care. I don't work for the caterer.
It's not goopy chicken.
It's always goopy chicken.
It always is.
And gray green beans. It's always the same thing. Goopy chicken and gray green beans, and then I eat that, and I'll talk for an hour. So, I mean, that's just me. Hey, I'll tell you what's also me.
There it is.
Yep.
Good
segue.
There's
a transition. What's also me is I love all things military. I love the military tech. I love military history. And that's why I'm really excited to get a chance to talk to Jonathan Horn. He's an author and former speechwriter for President George W. Bush. And he's got a book that's just coming out called The Fate of Generals, MacArthur, Wainwright, and the Epic Battle for the Philippines. We'll talk to Jonathan Horn next on The Annie Fry Show, 97.1 FM Talk. My son
turned 10 just the other day. This is the Annie Fry Show.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Brad Young sitting in today. And as I told you before the break, I'm excited to talk to Jonathan Horn, not just because he's a former speechwriter of George W. Bush, but also that he's got a new book coming out called The Fate of Generals MacArthur, Wainwright, and the Epic Battle for the Philippines. So this is my chance to talk about not just the book and what he has to say about generals, but also just to talk about military preparedness in general, because that's a very strong topic for me. Jonathan Horn, welcome to 97.1 FM Talk St. Louis.
Thanks so much for having me today.
So I'm excited about your book, and I know that it's coming out soon. We'll talk about it when it's coming out. But let's get a flavor for this, because as I was perusing the book last night, as I'm looking at the topics and reading a lot of the in-depth material that you provide, one of the things that I learned is this, because we all know General MacArthur. I mean, he's famous, but yet General MacArthur owes a lot of his fame, doesn't he, to General Jonathan Mayhew Wainwright?
That's exactly right. Everybody is so familiar with that famous vow that Douglas MacArthur made after receiving orders to leave his army in the Philippines in 1942 and escape to the safety of Australia, where he said, "I shall return." But very few people remember the vow that MacArthur's, the second highest ranking general in the Philippines, a man named General Wainwright, made after MacArthur left. And his vow was he was going to stay in the Philippines and share the fate of his men, even when that meant becoming the highest ranking American prisoner of war of the Japanese during World War II. And so it seemed to me, as you said, you couldn't understand the vow that Douglas MacArthur made to return to the Philippines unless you understood the story of the man who bravely stayed with his troops and became a prisoner of the Japanese.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Philippines and World War II, because typically when you talk about some of the more well-known theaters of war when it comes to World War II, the Philippines doesn't necessarily rank high up in the public knowledge of a theater of war when it came to the Philippines. So just kind of give us an overview before we dive into some details about General Wainwright or General Douglas, but how critical were the Philippines to the battle against Japan in World War II?
That's a great question. You're right. Most people don't think about the Philippines as a critical front in World War II, but it was a critical front. In fact, the Philippines were American soil. They were an American colony, and it was Douglas MacArthur's father, Arthur MacArthur, who led the very first American troops into the city of Manila in 1898 during the Spanish-American War and saw the American flag raised above the city. In the years afterwards, American strategists in Washington realized that it would be very hard to defend the Philippines in the event of war with Japanese. And the reason is sort of obvious. If you look at the map, the Japanese could bring so many more troops to the Philippines before reinforcements could come across the ocean, Pacific Ocean, from the United States. And they realized that our forces in the Philippines might be in serious trouble in the event of war with Japan. And that is exactly what happened. In fact, just this week, we observed the anniversary of the largest surrender of American forces in history. It happened on April 9th, 1942, on the Bataan Peninsula, when nearly 80,000 United States forces surrendered to the Japanese.
And when we talk about the nuclear bomb that was dropped that ended World War II, the nuclear bombs, I should say, I remember that in history class, obviously I wasn't around then, but reading and studying this idea that the issue that was facing Harry Truman at the time was if the war, it just ends, then there's always going to be these battles that are going to be going on some of these islands. And so I know that the justification of dropping the bomb was to try to get a unilateral surrender of Japan in order to force the fighting that would happen on these outlying islands to come to a close. Did any of that impact any of the battles that were going on the Philippines?
You know, what's interesting is the Japanese themselves didn't really believe in surrender. And that was something that American commanders discovered over and over again when they faced the Japanese in the Pacific. And that was something that even Wainwright, before he had the terrible task of having to surrender his army to the Japanese, discovered himself. And so you can imagine what that meant for a prisoner of the Japanese to be a prisoner of an enemy who doesn't believe in surrender. It means they have no respect for you whatsoever, torture you, abuse you. And I think that had to weigh heavily on President Truman. He knew what it would cost American forces to invade the main islands of Japan. Yes. To try to end this war, and the terrible cost of life that it would take. And to be honest, it would have been just catastrophic for this country, and the bomb really was the only way out of this.
We're talking to Jonathan Horn. He's a former speechwriter for George W. Bush and also the author of a brand new book that's coming out called The Fate of Generals, MacArthur, Wainwright, and the Epic Battle for the Philippines. And Jonathan, when is your book coming out?
It's coming out on April 15th, which is next week, next Tuesday. It's tax day, but this is a more pleasant way to spend your money on this book.
And why is it, do you think, that we all know of Douglas MacArthur, and I don't know that present-day Americans can truly understand how much of a force of nature that Douglas MacArthur was in the 1940s and 1950s. Give us a sense here for a modern audience of just how big a figure Douglas MacArthur was in that 40s to 50s time frame.
You know, you put it very well. MacArthur really was America's most famous soldier entering World War II. And when he did reach Australia, he made that famous vow, "I shall return to the Philippines." And it wasn't yet American policy to necessarily return, but the force of MacArthur's words alone became a national commitment. It was a sort of an example of a general setting national policy with his words. And there were those in the years that followed 1942 who thought returning to the Philippines was a detour from the ultimate goal of defeating Japan. But MacArthur felt it was a moral obligation for our country. The Philippines were American soil. They were an American colony. His father had helped make it so. We had been forced out of those islands at the point of a bayonet. And the only proper way to return was with our own bayonets and to take them back from the Japanese. And that's exactly what Douglas MacArthur did when he landed in the Philippines in 1944.
And wasn't part of it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the expert here, not me, but wasn't part of the motivation of MacArthur to go back to the Philippines, obviously to retake the Philippines because it was technically American soil, but wasn't another part of his motivation to try to bring home some of the captured American soldiers that were still being held in the Philippines?
That's exactly right. There were still prisoners being held in the Philippines, and MacArthur wanted to get to them as fast as he possibly could. Now, the Japanese had taken a number of the prisoners they had taken in the Philippines and sent them to other places. Wainwright himself went from the Philippines to various prisons in Taiwan, eventually all the way to Manchuria, if you can believe it, where he was facing negative 49 degree temperatures. And he was spending the war in 1945. And we think about that, of course, we think there's only a few months left in the war. But Wainwright was so isolated, he had no idea what was happening in the outside world. You can see in his diary, he thought he was going to be a prisoner at least until 1947.
And again, I'm trying to compare and contrast from a modern day viewpoint. But I know most Americans will remember John McCain and the endurance that he had to exhibit when he was being held captive during the Vietnam War. So when you look at this general Jonathan Wainwright here, when you look at him, General Wainwright, what kind of torture did he have to endure? You just mentioned freezing temperatures, but what other types of torture did he have to endure?
The Japanese would beat him. They would systematically starve the prisoners. His weight, this is a 6'2" man, his weight falls down within months of being captured by the Japanese to 125 pounds. And to be honest, he's getting slightly better treatment than lower ranking officers and lower ranking soldiers are too. And this is from the Japanese treating, this is America's highest ranking general in captivity, and he's being treated this way. And of course, there's other forms of torture too. Isolation,
yes.
Long periods passed with no word from the outside world. And also, Wainwright is thinking, as he is a prisoner, that Americans will never understand the decision he made to surrender for the sake of his men. And of course, that doesn't end up being the case. He returns to a hero's welcome mm-hmm. in the United States in September 1945 and receives a ticker tape parade in New York City and does receive the Medal of Honor from President Harry Truman.
We're talking to Jonathan Horn, who is the author of the coming book, coming out next week, The Fate of Generals, MacArthur, Wainwright, and the Epic Battle for the Philippines. And Jonathan, before we change topics here, I do want to, because I want to talk about military preparedness today. But before we get to that, one more thing about MacArthur, his zeal for returning to the Philippines, retaking American what was American land, and also recovering American POWs. That attitude, that zeal, don't we see that to some extent carrying forward even to today when it comes to the desire of Americans to make sure that we recover those who have given the greatest sacrifice they can for our country in terms of dying for our country or being captured for our country?
Absolutely. And it's all part of the attitude of leave no man behind. And of course, for MacArthur, you can imagine how personal it was, because he had actually received orders from President Roosevelt to leave behind his army to starvation and surrender in the Philippines and go to Australia, which does, you know, feel a lot like the captain deserting the sinking ship. It wasn't his idea to go. He received orders to do it. And so you can imagine how personal this vow was to General MacArthur to fulfill it. I can't think of any example in history of a general having such a personal connection to the mission he was asked to carry out.
Mm. And I want to pivot just a little bit here. We're talking to Jonathan Horn, the author of The Fate of Generals, MacArthur, Wainwright, and the Epic Battle for the Philippines. But Jonathan, when I look today, and I'm looking at today through the lens of history, I know that before World War I, the United States was not very strong militarily. If you look at World War II, before World War II, we had the same situation where we weren't necessarily strong militarily. What lessons can we learn from that as we look to today at the possibility of what's called near-peer adversaries, Russia and China, the possibility of China invading Taiwan or blockading Taiwan? What lessons from history can we learn about military preparedness today?
You know, that's a fabulous question. And of course, as you look at that region of the world right now, the United States remains treaty-bound to defend the Philippines, which of course touches the South China Sea, where the Chinese are making grand control of that body of water. And you see confrontations between Philippine vessels and Chinese vessels ramming into them. So it is a spot with high tensions. As to the lesson, I think the best lesson is the lesson that Wainwright himself drew when he finally did leave prison and return to America in September 1945. And it's national preparedness, making these investments in our military. Basically, I think in the years leading up to World War II, strategists realized that it was going to be impossible to defend the Philippines in the event of war with Japanese. And our forces ended up paying a terrible cost over there for that unpreparedness, because our country was not willing at that point in our history, as you said, to bear the burdens of being a great military power.
Well, Ed, last question, because we're coming up at the end of the segment, Jonathan, but as I follow military trends today, I know there was a period of time where the Philippines wanted to distance themselves militarily, economically, relationally from the United States. And yet today we see the Army basing what's called the Typhoon missiles in the Philippines as a hedge against China. China doesn't like that. You already referenced the hassling that China is doing against the Philippines. So because of China, are we seeing a growing or a return, rather, to a connection or a return relationally between the United States and the Philippines?
I think absolutely. And Pete Hegseth was just in the Philippines, and he said that this was an area of the world where our allies were going to see we were going to invest in a way that was unprecedented. And I think, we have these bonds with the Philippines. And in fact, it really does go back to MacArthur keeping his vow to the island during World War II. People still remember that in the Philippines. And it's going to be very important as we go forward and tensions continue to rise with China.
Hmm. Jonathan Horn, author of the book, The Fate of Generals MacArthur, Wainwright, and the Epic Battle for the Philippines, on sale April 15th, next week. Jonathan, thanks so much for taking just a little bit of your valuable time to join us this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk St. Louis.
Thanks so much for having me.
I could talk to that guy all day long. And I'm hopefully it was as enjoyable for you as it was for me. Hey, when we come back, we've got some more news to discuss, to break down. News that you may not hear anywhere else other than right here on the Annie Fry Show, 97.1 FM Talk. The company lost the war.
This is the Annie Fry Show. The bee or not the bee?
Brad, if you are unfamiliar with the way that we do the bee or not the bee, here are the rules. I give you a headline. You tell me whether it is satire, a.k.a. the Babylon Bee, or it is a real headline, and then I'll give you the rest of the story.
Well, and I'm always about the rules, because the rules are always
the rules
important.
Matter.
Oh, they matter. Oh, yes, they do.
All right, here we go. First one, most protesters remain unaffected by Trump's showerhead deregulation.
The B?
That is definitely the B.
I'm going to say real.
It could be true without it being a real headline.
It does come from the Babylon Bee, though. Quote, deregulation of what heads? Protester Willow Moonbeam said when asked about Trump's showerhead deregulation, I'm out here to talk about Donald Trump's blatant trampling of our freedoms, destruction of our economy, and poisoning of our planet. And you're asking me about something I've never heard of in my life. At publishing time, activists also claimed to be unfazed by the potential of prices on soap, shampoo, deodorants, and other personal hygiene products going up due to tariffs.
Come on, Pierre, let's run. We might be washed.
Well, and again, like Ethan's point, I think Ethan's point is that it can be the B and it can be true at the same time.
This happens a lot. This
it happens a lot. It really does.
Yeah. Because it's what really makes good comedy.
It does.
Because when you look at those protesters, you're looking at them going, you know, you have never had a shower, have you?
I just love the way the article starts. The showerhead deregulation starts. Deregulation of what heads? You're asking me about something I've never heard of in my life.
My body, my choice.
Yeah.
All right. Next one. Georgia police arrest Speedy Gonzalez.
Oh,
real.
No. This is real.
I'm going to say it's real.
You're saying real?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. It sounds it's too specific.
It's too wild for it to not be real.
It is real. And it's not like they arrested the cartoon character in some sort of, you know, public PR funny thing. This is a real person. Gainesville police arrested 40-year-old Speedy Gonzalez. Yes, that is his real name.
Massive win for his parents right there.
Oh, no doubt.
After identifying him on surveillance footage at a Walmart in March, Gonzalez is accused of carrying out a series of thefts in these multiple stores. It lists all the counties. And then it says, investigators say that Gonzalez used a simple but effective method to conceal his thefts. Whenever I hear these, I can't say I'm proud of them. I just am like, huh, you kind of did something there.
What if you invested that energy in like legal ways?
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
They found a way to not be caught. He allegedly stuffed high-priced small items such as nicotine products, diabetic test strips, and gum. I didn't know gum was expensive now.
Expensive gum, man.
Into larger containers like trash cans or mailboxes, and then at the checkout, he would actually buy the mailbox. It was just full of stuff. And they'd leave the store, and nobody would have any idea. So
well, genius.
But you know, that reminds me, I actually witnessed a crime 2 weeks ago. I was over at the Emmy Micro Center, which is in the Brentwood, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm in line, and I'm the next guy in line, and I'm buying a new backup hard drive for my law firm. And I'm the next guy in line. The guy in front of me is wearing a hoodie. He's got shorts and sneakers. And he looks to be about 16, 17. And so he sets this very expensive Sony digital camera on the counter. And then when the clerk turns to type it in, he picks it up and bolts for the door. And so the clerk is like, hey, I want to chase this guy. So alarms are going off because it wasn't desensitized, you know, the anti-theft device. So it sets off the alarms. And this clerk is chasing this dude through the parking lot. Never gets close to him. Never. But I looked at the cash register because I was the next in line at the cash register. And it was $1,200 camera with $400 in taxes. And so it was a $2,600 theft. And I thought, oh, my goodness, that's an expensive camera. But, yeah, and then we saw the guy out walking through the parking lot. And then, this is the best part, there was a bunch of guys at a different counter, and they were, like, from my hometown in Southern Illinois. So they were saying, hey, if you give me what I'm buying, I'll chase that guy through the parking lot. I'll chase him down right now if you just give me what I'm buying for free. And I said to him, I said, well, why would they... How would that be any different than the guy stealing something? You're just recommending
to chase
something.
The criminal.
I know, but then you're getting something for free, so the financial detriment.
It's the reward of being a good citizen, Brad.
I don't know if he's a good citizen, if he's just saying, I'll do it, you give me free stuff too.
Brad, I don't know if your lawyer is rubbing off on me, but then doesn't Micro Center open themselves up for liability?
Yes, they do, and that's the other thing I said to this guy. I said, well, if they're paying you to chase down criminals, and this guy blows your head off with a pistol, now you're going to file a comp claim because you've been injured while working for the company that just got stolen. And the guy said, I don't even know what you're talking about, but I'll still chase him down. And I thought, okay.
You actually had that conversation with that guy?
I did. And I desperately wanted to put on my Southern Illinois drawl to talk to him because he sounded a lot like this. Just like in my...
Wait, was he talking to you?
Yeah.
As if you had the authority to tell him he could do it?
No, I was arguing with him because he was talking to one of the other clerks.
Wait,
I'm like, dude.
My question is, why would he go to the cash register or to the desk in the first place?
Good reason.
To get the camera.
Good reason, because that's the easy... You can't exit the store unless you go through the checkout. And this place where I was checking out was the closest checkout counter to the door.
But he still rang
gotcha.
It up.
But, well, he sat it down so that the guy would turn so he could get a head start on him as his attention was diverted. It was very smart strategy.
The way Micro Center is laid out, it would look incredibly suspicious for somebody to walk with a camera past everybody in line and then out past the six registers and then out the door.
Right. So that's the way he got the maximum amount of distance before raising suspicion.
Tell you what, there's two forms of theft there. Number one is the guy who stole the camera.
Yeah.
Number two is the $400 in taxes that you'd have to pay buy that camera.
I know. I saw it. It was going to be a $1,600 purchase. Whew. So, but I will tell you, the Brentwood police were there in like 90 seconds. So I was impressed by that. But witnessed my own crime.
Did they catch him? Did you see them?
No.
Okay.
No, he walked through the parking lot. Then he was taunting the clerk. He was pointing at the clerk like, you couldn't catch me.
Really?
Yeah, he was taunting him.
That's crazy work. But wait, but the police didn't catch him either?
No, because he was already gone before
the
cops showed up.
Okay, gotcha.
A minute and a half head start.
Fascinating.
All right, next one. Actual Nazi struggling to stand out now that everyone is a Nazi.
B. I'm voting Babylon B.
It's the B. A guy named Alex Polhaus still proudly displays his Nazi tattoos and clothing when he's in town, but he noted it doesn't seem to turn heads like it used to in the old days. Now I think everyone assumes I'm a victim of left-wing vandalism. It's sad. At publishing time, Polhaus had found himself further saddened and confused when a mob of pro-Hamas supporters on a nearby campus cheered when they saw his swastika armband. That's solid satire, you guys.
That's so good.
That's solid stuff.
All right. In effort to clean up the city, San Francisco erects 45-foot naked woman statue from Burning Man.
Oh, the jokes.
Real.
I'm going to say real.
Yeah, this one's real.
This is real. The sculpture stands at 45 feet tall and weighs about 32,000 pounds. The sculpture, which is now in San Francisco, was made by Petaluma artist Marco Cochrane, and a decade ago on Treasure Island. It is comprised of 55,000 welded connections. The sculpture first debuted at Burning Man in 2015.
Wait, here's my question. A Petaluma artist. A Petaluma, if my foreign language skills are anything, isn't that the same word for pants?
I think you're thinking of pantaloons, and this is Petaluma.
Oh, okay.
Close. Right. Close. Just like my favorite blues player is Snuggeroo, but that's not really his name. It's Snuggerood, and I want him to be cute like a Hello Kitty character.
Exactly.
Snuggeroo. I think that sounds like a backwards robe that you wear.
A Snuggeroo?
A Snuggeroo.
Yeah, exactly.
So the first place that I knew this was real because I saw a video on Twitter of the, I guess, the construction or the workers, like, you know, I guess,
of
working
this statue.
On it. And they were like,
yeah,
they were standing right under the butt.
Only one way to get inside.
they were cleaning out that statue's butt. It was the first thing they did when they erected it.
Oh,
that guy was going right in that statue's butt. And people were all videoing it. There's tons of videos of it. All right.
Oh, you said a lot of words.
There were so many videos of that on Twitter, you couldn't get away from it.
12-year-old humor right here.
That guy's going in that giant statue's butt.
Quick, get your phone.
You can always count on it, right?
Who wouldn't
here.
Video that?
Oh, I know.
Everybody would.
Yeah, I'm going viral.
Look at this drill in that statue's butt.
Well, should we go in the foot? No, let's get a giant ladder. Go in right there in the hole.
All right.
Trump classifies Panda Express as domestic terror organization.
I don't know.
You're gonna go with the B?
I think it's the B.
I'm gonna go real just because I wanna make sure we're not unanimous.
Trump classifies Panda Express as domestic terror organization is the B. Quote, no longer will we tolerate these restaurants with foreign ties to operate within our borders, Trump said. For far too long, while the Chinese government has taken advantage of our country through unethical trade practices, we have watched the influence of Panda Express grow throughout America. No more. Have you ever had their chow mein? Way too much shredded cabbage.
First L that Trump's taken during this admin.
Do we have time for one more?
We're
going to six or
50,
seven?
6:50.
Okay. All right. Landmine detection award won by giant rat.
Real.
Yeah, this seems like something a rat would be good at.
Real.
That sure. seems like something a rat would do.
Brad's
yeah,
familiar.
It is real. The rats are trained to detect the chemical components of explosives and rightly ignore abandoned pieces of metal to find unexploded devices much faster. The previous holder of the Landmine Detection Award was another rat that was called Magawa. It retired in 2021 with a total of 71 mines found. The new one has found 101 landmines in Cambodia.
Well, you know why scientists use lawyers now for testing instead of rats, right?
No.
Well, there's more lawyers than rats, there's less chance of emotional attachment, and there's some darn things that rats won't do. That's it. Yeah, great reaction there. Okay. We're going to end on a low note here on the Annie Fry Show. Hope you're having as much fun as we are. The Annie Fry Show, 97.1 FM Talk. We'll be right back.
Men, when was the last time you felt unstoppable? Low testosterone could be draining your energy, strength, and sex drive. At Beaumont Health and Wellness, we help men reclaim their power with hormone replacement therapy, weight loss, and IV hydration. Get peak performance with our $147 hormone replacement starter kit, including a private consultation, precision blood work, and a free B12 shot to fire up your system. Beaumont Health and Wellness. Age is just a number. Desire is forever. Call 913-261-9855 or book now at BeaumontHealthKS.com.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a
DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.